Welcome to Building Leaders, everyone, the show about the creative geniuses that are building our world. My name is Angelos Nicolaou. I'm the director at Sector and your host. With us, as always, Michalis Solomontos, our vice president. We love talking to the superstars of the construction industry and sharing their stories with you on this show. If you have anyone that you'd like us to interview, please feel free to share their contact details with us at info@sector.build. Again, that's info@sector.build. Thanks, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Omnia, please start by introducing yourself, name and position, and your company.
All right. So I'm Omnia Halawani, co-CEO and founder at Griffin. We're headquartered in Dubai, started in Dubai a little bit over 8 years ago. Now we have branches in Abu Dhabi and in Cairo as well, and looking to expand more in the region. We're a multidisciplinary consultancy, so we provide engineering and design services, as well as advisory and policy shaping studies. We work in new construction, as well as in existing buildings, what we like to call intervention, whether it's from an architectural perspective or an energy efficiency and sustainability perspective. And I think that more or less sums it.
That's very cool. I love the title, founder. And I really like to know why. Why did you start your own company? You have a great background from a great university. You're an electrical engineer. Why did you want to start your own company?
Look, I think it has always been at the back of my head that eventually I want to work, like pave my own way, have my own targets to achieve and have it done my way. But when we started the company, myself and Hassan, my co-founder, there was a gap in the market, especially when it comes to energy efficiency. So we focused on that at the beginning, and we definitely got traction. So we've built a track record that, at least within the region and locally, I'm proud to say that we have the majority of the large-scale projects. We've consulted for all the large, whether it's utilities or developers, as well as international management consultancies. So we act as their local technical partner. Then we expanded further into engineering, sustainability, and we built the whole company around sound and deep technical know-how. Hassan he's a lecturer with ASHRAE, with the Association of Energy Engineers, with EVO. So he teaches all the courses related to energy efficiency as well as engineering. So we build on that. We build that as well into our team through a lot of trainings, a lot of certifications. Our team is highly certified. And we get that into the market. I think it's a gap that we're filling, and we're happy to be doing that.
That's very cool. So your Griffin is obviously very successful now. I'm really curious for you to take us through that journey. Why Hassan? You know, how did this all start? You know, before you started this, you worked for 5 or 6 years, if I'm not mistaken, for another company. What was that thing that triggered your mind to say, you know, let's go for it. Let's start.
Look, I'm not going to lie and say that it was all planned and paved. And no, it was, I knew I wanted to do that eventually, but not 6 years through my career, because that's a bit early, I'd say. But I'm happy that I did that early. No regrets whatsoever. So I had a lot of ambitions. I had a lot of ideas that I wanted to implement. And to be honest with you, what happened is that, you know, when you ask for a seat at the table and you're rejected that seat, I just jumped. Like, okay. I wanted to put my effort where I would make a difference. What happened so is that Hassan used to work with me at the same company, actually. And around the same time, he got an offer from a large developer, and he went there. We both started Griffin together. He was working part-time. I was full-time dedicated. And then in less than a year, he joined full-time. And this is when we started to grow and grow.
Wow.
So yeah, it wasn't like, planned years ahead. No, it was a spur of a moment, but it was in the making. It was always at the back of my head.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I won't say it was easy. We always faced that, you know, oh, you guys are too young. You know that. You guys are young as well. So I'm sure that you were getting it at the beginning as well.
Well, we still get it. But
yes. Like you go into a meeting and they're all gray-haired and old. But when we talk,
and men.
But by the way, like, I'd say a lot of people say that being a woman in the industry, and we're not getting that, but I think it's actually a privilege.
Yeah.
You get that unique, status. Like, I'm the only female in a room of 20 males.
Yeah.
you get, like, when you talk, like, people at least give you that space. And then when you have the technical know-how and you have the experience and you have the thing to say, they listen and it goes. Now people trust us. They don't look at our age anymore.
Yeah.
They come to us for our technical know-how and our experience.
Yeah, and, you know, that's so important. And I think that's where perhaps a lot of entrepreneurs miss the point where, yes, you know, you have all that going for you, all that, you know, that the spotlight, the energy, but you said something and then you said it again and again, and it's the technical know-how, and you proved yourselves. And I think, you know, no matter what, that's the piece of the conversation that always comes back. You know, is Griffin good at what they do? And the reality is yes. So I guess that's a big part of that. Now,
and it doesn't come easy, and it never stops. I think out of all employees in our firm, Hassan and I are the ones who continue to learn the most.
Yeah.
Like we read, we spend all our free time reading, taking courses, watching webinars. So it never stops. Learning never stops.
That was my question here. What does it take to get to that level of, you know, you're young, everything's stacked against you, you're starting your own company. And let's be honest, I mean, your competition is fierce. You know, you're competing against consultancies of all shapes and sizes, smaller, bigger, the biggest, you know, ACOMs of the world. What keeps you to that level of focus? And how do you
look, the ACOMs of the world, if you put it this way, are our clients as well.
Okay.
All right. So
good for you.
How do we get there is, I don't know, you have to persevere, really. It's just about that. And I've been in the UAE for all my life. So I've been here for 36 years.
Wow.
So I've got the connections, I've got the people, but it's not always about the connection. So a connection can get you there at the beginning. But if you don't do a good job, they're not going to keep doing you favors for the end of time,
yeah.
Right? And Hassan he teaches a lot of those courses. So a lot of our clients come through those courses as well.
Mm.
So when your instructor works in the field and you find him knowledgeable, then they come to you.
Yeah.
So it's twofold. It's this and that.
Yeah. How important is it for today's engineers to keep on learning, to keep on getting new courses, staying up to date? And you're in a, you know, in the world of sustainability as well, and there's not enough knowledge around that. I mean, I graduated college in 2013 for my bachelor's, and I rarely had any sustainability courses. I mean, that's so important for the planet and for our community. How important is that, do you think?
Look, sustainability specifically hits a chord because while sustainability is it's a global issue, right? And it's something on everyone's agenda. The UN SDGs are there, and every other rating system. The sad thing is that projects and engineers as well tend to take sustainability as a checklist.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that LEED checklist or a Sedana checklist or a BREEAM checklist. And it's just, okay, do this, do that. I've done this. Okay, well, here we can get the credits. But it's rare when the client themselves, they're aware of what sustainability entails as a whole. And they push for actual achievement of sustainability goals. And we've struggled with that. So there are a lot of projects where we work as energy modelers, for example, or as independent commissioning agents. Then when we get the model from the sustainability engineer or the checklist, it's not real. It's just to get the design rating, and it doesn't reflect through the actual operational phase of the building.
Mm.
This is where the actual costs and energy usage is entailed.
Right.
So while sustainability is on everyone's agenda, I still do not think that it's done as it should be done. And this is where we struggle with educating clients on that. Some of our clients are very well aware, and they actually look for real sustainability goals, and they look for monitoring throughout the operational phase of the building. But others are just happy with getting the plaque on the building, and that's that.
It's a nice plaque, but so if I'm getting you, it's part of a checklist now, and you'd like to see a culture shift. If I'm getting that right, have you seen any signs of that happening? I mean,
yes, there's a lot of clients now that look for real sustainability, and especially that. So electricity is subsidized here, and it's highly subsidized in the UAE. But the subsidy in the past years have been lifted a little bit. You know, it's here and there, not significantly, but it's being done. And whenever that happens, clients are more aware of their energy bills.
Mm.
Then again, whenever you get Look, I have something like that I always believe in. If it doesn't make sense financially, then it's not going to follow through. So for us, we like to approach clients from an energy perspective. So we tell them, okay, so those are your bills. We will help you reduce your bills. And this is your payback. This is your return on investment. And this is normally what clicks and works.
So
we're seeing people. This is how we get to them. And then we start educating and they get to learn more about the benefits, the actual benefits.
So it's really about the longer term relationship with the customer. And I find that really interesting because now we live in a world where we see a lot of companies flipping fast money, let's say, not being profitable and getting a really high valuations and, you know, being in it for the exit and so on and so forth. And what you're saying really takes a lot of guts and patience to go there and stay with the customer for the long term in order to educate them and educate them for a cause that you believe is important. I'd love to know from you, you know, other than the market gap and other than the practical financial side of things, and that, you know, one way or another will become an issue. You know, we're looking at Saudi Arabia now. Prices are, VAT has tripled, electricity has doubled, gas prices are up as well. I'm not sure what that figure is, but it's, you know, it's a stark difference from when I grew up there 5-10 years ago, when was the last time I lived in Saudi. And we are seeing that culture shift. But other than that, other than the financial side of things, why is it important as construction engineers to be mindful of that?
Look, Saudi Arabia, if you mention Saudi Arabia specifically, it's quite interesting. All those new cities that are coming up, they have very heightened sustainability goals. And I think they're doing it the right way, to be honest with you. They're really conscious about it. Like those clients that I'm telling you are actually looking into the real sustainability. The majority of them are in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
There's a big shift, and it is being driven by His Highness Mohammed bin Salman, Sheikh Mohammed bin Salman. And he has directed all those cities to be sustainable. And that's that. They're looking for very ambitious sustainability KPIs, the majority of them, which is quite interesting. And it's very, and I hope that it continues in the right way. I hope it doesn't turn into a checklist that it's just done and that's that. Of course, there's a lot of bigger names in the UAE as well that achieve sustainability in a true and genuine way as well. We're happy to work with them.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah. And they have all that sun. So there's a lot you can do there.
A lot that you can capture as well.
What's your favorite part, you know, about running your company?
Favorite? I don't know. It's something different. I work, I think, much harder than when I was an employee. Much longer hours, weekends. I'm not saying that it's healthy, and I try to reduce that as much as possible, but it's the reality of it. But there is something that when you work to achieve your own vision, and it's not like I was a CEO for I don't know how many years and I've got that experience and put it here. No, we're building it step by step. I mean, I have a master's in business. That helps.
Yeah.
But we're still building it step by step. And the growth is hard, but it's nice at the same time. I think it's hardest normally on the employees themselves, because with growth, you need to streamline things and you need to do a lot of things that to help to aid that growth. But it's very, I don't know, it's like a baby, you know, that you're saying you're growing your own. There's something different about it.
Yeah. You have to, let's say, pinch yourself when you, you know, look at your team go from, I don't know, 2 people to 30 to 40 to...
Exactly, yes.
How has that experience of the first nervous parts of starting your company where, you know, the new employees are coming in and going out to the very first customers, how did you sort of fight through that, let's say? What kept you grounded and focused during that phase?
Look, we were with them on the ground. It's not like we're sitting on our chairs and just seeing everyone out there on the field. No, I remember one of our first, we call it our first significant project. It was an energy audit for Nakheel. It was for around 300 of their buildings. I was out there taking measurements, light measurements, while pushing my three-month-old son in his cart. So
no way.
We were down there with them on the ground. So it's not like, you know, we're not sitting on our high chairs and just looking down.
Yeah.
Now, as the projects grow and we have many more projects, we need to take a seat, not a seat back, but you need, you know, to cater for all those projects. So maybe we're not on field as much as we used to be, but we're definitely involved in each and every project. We're close to it, each and every project, each and every client, either me, Hassan, everyone. I mean, I don't know. Our team is very tight. We work together and we're happy to have that team situation going on.
So you still interact with your clients even now, even as you're growing with every single client. What do you like to listen in? What do you like to hear from them in terms of their requirements?
They're happy for sure. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. What's a success story for you? What makes you feel good? At which point will you say, oh, this was a good day?
It's not only about the clients. It's definitely about keeping clients happy because that's the lifeline of the company, right?
Yeah.
But it's not our greatest assets. So it has to be a combination of happy clients, happy team. Happy team is very important to us. So they're the assets of the company.
Yeah.
And definitely... every project has a significant thing to us. So there's no project that we prefer over the other. It's not by size, definitely.
Okay.
Some of the projects are on the smallest side, but they have the biggest impact or they're the closest. I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint.
Yeah. I guess that's where I want to take this. You mentioned biggest impact. What's big impact for you? What does that mean?
Okay, so our slogan is like towards sustainable cities and social impact.
Awesome.
We try to, so our aim is basically with every project to introduce a little bit more other in energy efficiency, sustainability into the planet as a whole, or have a social impact, improve a community, at the least is reduce any negative impact on the community. So yeah. That's the least that we aim at.
Yeah.
So with every single project, we look into that side and we try to advise our clients with taking better decisions, introducing better options, and they don't necessarily increase the capex.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those options will actually reduce your capex, like right sizing the building when it comes to cooling load, for example.
Yeah.
So instead of sizing it at 1,000 tons while it only needs 700 or 500, that's very important. It reduces the capex.
Yeah.
Then you can convince the client to, instead of putting less efficient AC, they put more efficient AC because now they have the luxury of having it there.
Yeah.
And it reflects on their operational costs in the end of the day. So life cycle cost is reduced overall.
That's
so
great.
Those are the kinds that we enjoy communicating with our clients on and convincing them.
Yeah. And, you know, once you show it, then it's much easier to convince. Okay. I love that, you know, you have such a big goal and you're achieving it. So I'm curious, you know, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, what is it that helps you get there? Is it balance? Is it a rhythm? You know, there's all these various words that are being thrown around the business world. What do you believe? And what have you seen work there?
Things get busy, right? And it's easy to forget or get very busy to think about those things. So we always tend to pause, think about our goals and our values. And with every new project, I've actually just recently started that. So now it's mandatory for us with every single new project to get the team that will work on the project together and discuss those goals and see how we can embed them in every project so that it's embedded within what we do. It was easy to achieve that when we had just a few projects going on, but now as we grow and as the projects increase, we have to consciously embed that within everyone in the team. So we do that. I've recently started this and we're continuing with that for sure.
So a lot of organization.
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. And you also mentioned earlier that it's important to, I'm not sure you put it in the terms of a balance, but you said, you know, I'm trying to make sure I don't burn out is what I understood. And is life outside of work an important part of that? And
Of course. Look, I've gone through burnt out before, so I don't want to go through that again for sure.
Yeah.
So I tend to force myself to stop or even tell the employees to stop. We try to do collective activities at least weekly.
Wow.
We go cycling as a team. So we try to do that as well in terms of exercise, make sure that we get that in there and hopefully get a better life work balance for everyone.
For everyone that's listening now that's looking at you and looking up to you and perhaps wants to work for you one day and you want the best talent, what do you look for in the people that you hire?
All right. So this is always the hardest part, right? Hiring to me is always the most critical aspect of the business, I'd say, because we want someone who fits the culture. We pride on our technical know-how. So we always look for people who are technically sound. If they're fresh, then they have to be technically hungry. development, continuous development is very important for us. So everyone that would fit our company has to be hungry for knowledge, hungry for continuous development. And personality is a very important aspect. So I wouldn't choose any over the other. It has to be a combination for sure. And this is what makes it hard, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's very hard as well to, you know, in a single interview or even 2-3 interviews to judge a person completely. So hiring is for sure something that I myself continue to learn, and it's how the best way to do hiring is. I don't have all the answers
for sure. So it's not hard to miss the mark, to get sidetracked in an interview and then, you know, you hire the person and then it doesn't work out quite that way.
Yeah. And there's always something that says hire slow, right? So hire slow, but you don't always have the luxury of that. Sometimes you need to hire fast, and
yeah,
hiring fast comes with its drawbacks.
Yeah.
It's a hit or miss sometimes. Or not. I don't want to say 50-50, but yeah, it's definitely hard.
Growing up, I always saw, you know, on the map, it was always, you know, Paris, London, New York. And now it's Paris, London, New York, Dubai, UAE. You know, this tiny little country is on the map somehow. And here we are talking about talent and growing a company. And you mentioned the projects in Saudi that perhaps you're involved with, and they have a global spotlight. How important has it been for you to build this business in the UAE? How do you believe that has impacted your growth and your success?
All right, so it's not that I was out and I came to Dubai specifically to build. I was lucky to be living in Dubai. I've seen Dubai when it was not what everyone knows Dubai for. My parents got me to Dubai when I was 3 months old.
Oh, wow.
So I was almost born there. So I've seen it when Sheikh Zayed Road had no towers except for the Trade Center. And from the Trade Center, it was all the way until a now demolished building, which was the Metropolitan. That was in between our own desert, and we could see camels in that area. So to me, Dubai is a combination of, I'm very emotional in Dubai. Like, it's my chosen home.
Yeah.
I choose to continue. Yes, I was almost born in Dubai and I grew there, school, university and everything. But I also chose to continue there because of where I see it. A lot of people say Dubai is more of a bubble and a show off, but when you've actually lived there, the leaders, they do have a vision, and they're very adamant about getting it done. They're not playing around. They have a vision and they want to get it done. There is a lot of successful PR going on around, but there's also a lot of real deep-rooted actions that are being taken. And I don't think that if it was all PR that we would see Dubai be where it is right now.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, it's in the past few years, it has been a great shift. And it's very fast as well.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, I think the whole world is looking at Saudi Arabia. It's not just...
100%.
I think if anyone is not looking at Saudi Arabia, they will miss the train.
Yeah. Yeah.
This way.
So you're hopeful in general for the Middle East as well. And all the talent that you found there mostly has been, you know, local?
Not necessarily, no. So we've hired from a lot of places around the world. It's not all local, no.
That's very cool. It's very cool that, you know, it's attracting talent that way. Kind of, you know, maybe, you know, New York, London, early days. I mean, who knows?
Look, it's a good quality of life that you get. It is expensive somehow, but you get a good quality of life. And I think everyone is looking for that. Yes, a lot of people think or not think they come to Dubai as a station to move on. And that's not wrong, right? Everyone, they have their own aspirations and their own goals. But for me, I've lived there all my life and I'm happy there. And I know a lot of people as well.
That's awesome. Now it kind of feels like in the Middle East that we're building cities from scratch. And, you know, you are in the sustainability world and you are in the consulting world. If you could build your own city, do you like the direction that these cities are going in? And what would you like to see that perhaps is included or isn't included in what you're seeing so far?
Is changing the climate an option? Canceling summer, if possible. The unbearable heat. But yeah, this is a big question, I think. But definitely something that sustainability would definitely be there, but also a livable community.
Mm.
So livable and sustainable, modern for sure, but still... Well, if I'm inventing a city, then I don't know where the deep-rooted heritage would be. But this is a very important aspect of, I think, any city. And I think this is what I'm liking in the UAE's direction in the recent years, is that they're starting to really highlight Dubai as we knew it before. The old Dubai is being highlighted. And I like that. There was a phase where it was all about, you know, build those skyscrapers, build the big cities, build and build and build. And this is what got Dubai to where it is now.
Yeah.
But there is a very nice direction in the recent years where they're highlighting the heritage. And it's a very... It's not as old as, I'm Egyptian, I come from Egypt, so I'm not going to compare it to, you know, we have thousands of years and of history. It's not the same, but it's unique and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, if I build a city, it should have all of those factors.
What do you mean when you say livable? In what sense? In what respect?
Livable as in, you know, the community-wise, walkable, it's... accessible, you have a lot of amenities, you don't need to go into, you know, drive long ways to get this or that. There's a lot of aspects when it comes to livability, right? Even involving the community in city planning or in the community planning. It's a large topic that would require hours of discussion on its own.
Yeah. But, you know, we see this subject coming up more and more. It was also brought up in the latest video by His Highness Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the announcement of the line when he said at NEOM, when he said you can be anywhere you want within 5 minutes. And we're sort of, at least from our side, you know, outside of the, you know, sustainability world, let's say, we're seeing that shift where we hear more people talk about the subject of sustainability, but in the sense that it's also good for the people. It's not just good for the planet. You know, the atmosphere inside the building matters. The livability of the community matters. Is there a project, Omnia, that gets you really excited? It doesn't have to be from the Middle East, from around the world. Is there a particular project that comes to mind that you say, you know, that's awesome for the world?
Look, I don't have anything in mind, I'll be honest. nothing comes to mind. I think there is something good in... I take something from every project. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You can build your own world. Very cool. All right. So something that we ask all of our guests on the podcast, and I'd love to ask you, is where would you like to see the construction industry in 10 years from now?
Okay. Again, multiple things. So definitely more integrated design. I think if I point integrated design, that would solve a whole lot of things related to the construction industry. When we're talking about the early stages, so having everyone collaborate at the beginning would definitely result in a better building or a better community or a better city. And there's a lot of roles that need to be embedded within every project to make sure that it results in that the design intent remains the same. And so the independent commissioning is very important, and it has to be involved since the inception of the project to embed it within employers' requirement, design, basis of design, all throughout the life cycle of the project. And the role of the commissioning agent is very important for the building to operate as it was intended to.
Yeah,
you have, of course, the environmental quality and the indoor air quality is very important as well. And it has to be embedded as well since the beginning. Sustainability, whether it's at the beginning in terms of achievable and real KPIs within the employer's requirement and seeing it throughout in a real and true manner. It's not just a checklist, as I said previously. And then the big item is the true integration between architects and engineers. It's not always. We're seeing a lot more integration, but the traditional way of doing things is that architects start and then everyone else joins the board. So I think if we tackle integrated design, it would solve the majority of the problems that we're seeing within the construction industry. Another important aspect, and I think that was felt by everyone with the COVID pandemic, is that the construction industry is one of the least digitized industries in the world. Whether it's supply chain or site, like we've seen projects that went to a complete halt because during lockdown, you just, how will the site progress?
Right.
And I'm not saying that it has to be 100% digitized, but definitely digitalization has to come at a much higher rate into the construction industry than what we're seeing now.
What do you think can take us to, because an integrated design is a very important part of, I think it's the beginning of everything. If we start, you know, designing as a team, thinking as a team, then we'll build as a team, then we'll operate as a team, and it's better for everyone. What do you think, because I really don't have a good glimpse in that world. From your perspective, what do you think will take us there? What is the culture shift that needs to happen in order for us to get there? Is it a practical issue, or is it just a concept or cultural issue that's keeping us from that?
I don't think there's anything stop. It should start with the employee. If the employer wants it to be done right, it will be done right. Integrated design is one of the credits when it comes to all those sustainability rating systems. But it's, again, just something that you check. Yeah. You have a report, you submit it, and then you get the credit. So if it's done right, the guidelines are there. We do it. A lot of people do it. As much as we can, we do it. So it's not something that's not achievable, and it definitely results in a better building or a better built environment in the end of the day.
Yeah. And you've seen that, you know, yourself with being part of teams that have started together, designing a building together.
True. Yes.
Very interesting. Very cool. Omnia, I don't have any other questions on Mihaly.
Thank you so much, Omnia. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We really do hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you think that it delivered value to you, please share it with a friend who will appreciate it as well. Thanks.